Welcome to Tokyo Game Life, a Tokyo-based video game podcast focusing on Nintendo and gaming culture in Japan's capital. Your host, Mono, here to bring you a slice of gaming life from Tokyo. But we're stepping outside of Tokyo this episode and heading all the way to Kyoto to check out Nintendo's newest merch store, Nintendo Kyoto. Returning guest Kyoto Gamer breaks down his visit to the newest Nintendo hotspot and gives tips on how you can get the most out of the store. In the games, hey, there's a brand new Mario game out right now. I'll give some early impressions on Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Let's head to Nintendo Kyoto with Kyoto Gamer. Tokyo Game Life, only on the Tokyo Beat Podcast Network. Today's feature is all about Nintendo Kyoto, the third huge Nintendo merch store in Japan. While I'm a couple hundred miles away from it, fortunately, my guest is much, much closer. So guest, please introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name's Kyoto Gamer. I'm a local gamer in Kyoto who focuses mainly on retro gaming, but I also like a lot of merchandise as well as modern gaming. And pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining me yet again. We're going to chat about Nintendo Kyoto, which opened up on October 17th. It was announced on June 9th, quite a quick turnaround from the announcement to the grand opening. What was your reaction to hearing that Kyoto would get its very own Nintendo store?
It wasn't a total surprise because, as everyone knows, Nintendo's from Kyoto. And with the amount of tourists coming into Kyoto, I sort of thought to myself, oh, that really makes sense. I mean, there's so many visitors right now in the city. And obviously, a lot of people who come to Japan are into pop culture, such as gaming or anime and things. And I thought that's a smart move by Nintendo to build it in Kyoto. It makes sense. It's not the biggest city in Japan, but in terms of visitors and stuff, it's way up there.
I can definitely understand why Nintendo would want an official store in, you know, their city. So let's get into it. Where exactly in Kyoto is it located? And what's the atmosphere of the surrounding area?
So it's basically in the central business district of Kyoto. There's two kind of main intersections of Kyoto, one of them being Shijo Karasuma, Shijo being kind of the main shopping drag of Kyoto, and the other one being Shijo Kawaramachi, where the shop is located within one of the two kind of big department stores in the city, which is Takashimaya. And that's been there forever. And about a year ago, there was a big redevelopment near the Takashimaya building. And sort of in the back of my head, I was kind of wondering, oh, wonder what's going to go in there. Maybe another Gucci shop or something brand related. And then once the announcement of Nintendo was made that the shop would be opening in Kyoto, I'm like, ah, that's what they're doing. They're building something brand new from the ground up. And so that area is, on the weekends, it's the busiest part of town, really, other than Kyoto Station in terms of shopping. And there's a lot around there in terms of not only shopping, but cafes and tourists, and sightseeing is not too far away as well. So it's kind of the hub of the city.
But it is in sort of a comparative spot to Nintendo Tokyo, which is in Shibuya, which is, again, another huge tour spot and where a lot of shopping takes place. So I guess it kind of is maybe Kyoto's Shibuya. Would you say that's accurate?
Basically, yeah. Let's call it more like Kyoto's Shibuya / Ginza, kind of a combination of everything in one. But yeah, it's kind of the main shopping hub. And if somebody asked me beforehand, if you would choose a location that would best suit a spot for a Nintendo store, where would you put it? Well, I think where it is probably the exact spot I would choose.
How was it actually entering the store? Was there a huge line and did you need a timed entry ticket or could you just walk in?
So it opened 2 days before I arrived and went there, but I'd been following on Twitter through Japanese, basically language of what people had been doing to get into the shop and stuff. And I saw some videos on Twitter of this guy filmed for about a minute. He showed this huge line of people in the underground waiting to get tickets on day one. And I was a bit worried. I was a bit concerned by that. I thought, okay, well, this is day three. Maybe it'll be a bit calmer. So basically how it works is underneath the Shijo Street, which I've mentioned, there's an underground walkway, which basically is kind of, there's nothing down there normally. But recently, I think it was last Thursday, I was there and they had redone the whole part of it with all of the levels from the Mario games. It's a few hundred meters of Mario games on the wall with sound and audio from each level. It's really cool just to see that itself. And through the information on Twitter and online, I found out that that's the spot where you go to get your ticket in the morning. So I told my wife, we're going early, get ready, you know, put the makeup on early, we're going out. And so we got to Shijo Kawaramachi at about 8:45 on the day. And we went to the underground where you're supposed to go. And there was a million staff everywhere, like, and they were all holding signs. For example, on the street level, there's signs in English and Japanese saying you need a ticket to enter. And so I knew that already. And we went to the underground and there was more sort of directing us towards where the tickets were collected to enter. And I could see further down and I thought, where's the line? There's nobody waiting. And I saw one lady walk over and grab something and walk away. So I'm like, oh, I realized that nobody was waiting for tickets, entry tickets. So that sort of made me happy. And so we walked up and the lady said, here's your tickets. I looked at the time. It's at 10 o'clock, which is opening time. So I thought, excellent. I've got an hour to wait. So we went and grabbed a coffee. When the shop opened at 10 o'clock, the department store, I didn't really mention it, but basically Takashi Mai has built sort of an annex onto their department store, a brand new annex with not only the Nintendo store, but there's also other stuff in there, like a giant Tsutaya bookstore. There's other kind of collectible stuff, a bit of clothing and so on. And so basically what happened was we got to the gate at 10 o'clock. And, you know, there's a big crowd of people, not only for the Nintendo store, but also for the other shops as well. And I'm sure, as you know, when you try to go to like Universal Studios or like a department store that opens at exactly 10 o'clock, there's a bit of a rush to get in. And so there was a bit of a sort of a panic. Not, I wouldn't say panic, but people were sort of almost running to go in. And it was, you know, slightly stressful. Because it's a new part of the department store, I was very unfamiliar with it. It was our first time being in there. And my wife happened to talk to somebody and he gave us some good information. He said, at the very back of this building, there's some elevators that will take you right there. And we're like, okay. So we went back there and there was only like two other people who had actually gone back to the elevators. Everyone else was taking the escalators. So we got in the elevator and flew up very quickly. And once you got onto the top floor, there's the Nintendo store, but there's also other sort of limited events going on and seasonal, I guess, pop-up shops kind of thing. But then right in front of you is the Nintendo shop, and they've got it sort of partitioned off with kind of, for busy times, they had sort of like roping so that they could limit the amount of people to go into the shop based on the time of their ticket. But since it was opening time, they kind of just let everybody in quite quickly, and it was very smooth, actually, just to get in. And next thing I knew, I was in the shop.
What was the thing that stuck out to you when you entered the store?
Basically, what I noticed was the shape of the shop is sort of a long sort of rectangle. And it looked way bigger than the one. I've been to the shop in Osaka as well. And I'll sort of compare it now. The one in Kyoto seemed much longer and bigger, almost like an expansive space. So when you first look in, you can't actually see the whole store because there's a bit of it slightly around the corner and a bit off to the side as well. So it felt much bigger than the Osaka store, and I think it is. And in the middle of this rectangle that I've sort of mentioned is a kind of a red strip of on the ground of different colored tiles that are all red in the middle of this in the shop. And on top of these, on the ceiling above these red tiles is also red, but what's also on the ceiling is a bunch of glass cases with various merchandise and items sort of in the ceiling looking down at you. So that was really cool just to see different items and merchandise sort of really coolly displayed in the ceiling and these little sort of glass cases within the ceiling. Everything was divided, just I think as the other stores probably are, divided by each IP, each sort of game series. So there's the Pikmin series over here. There's the Zeldas over here. In the corner was Mario, Animal Crossing, and so on. I know in the Osaka shop, they've got statues of a character from each series. For example, in the Zelda area, there's a Link statue, and in the Mario section, there's a Mario statue, and so on. Whereas in this shop, the Zelda section and each section has a sort of an LCD screen that's kind of on two sides of a pillar or on a corner of the building, sort of. And these images on the LCD screens kind of slowly change over time and sort of rotate. So for example, at one point it says Nintendo Kyoto, and on the other side of it, there's a image of Link. And then it, after say 30 seconds, it rotates, and then the Kyoto's part's gone and Link's on the other side. And then Ganondorf and Zelda are there, and it sort of slowly changes over time like that. So I thought it was really cool, very, very, I wouldn't say futuristic, but it was very modern. But one thing I forgot to mention earlier, with that kind of red stripe in the middle of the shop, at the very end of it on the back wall, there's a massive LCD screen that says Nintendo Kyoto. And then it kind of scrolls, and then there's sort of a tiled picture with the different characters on it, Mario, Link, and so on, Animal Crossing characters and so on. And so that kind of changes. And I thought, oh, I'm sure possibly when there's special events or new merchandise, they're probably going to do some cool things with all these screens everywhere. That was sort of in the back of my head what I thought they could do with all the screens.
I want you to take a guess. Do you think Nintendo Kyoto or Nintendo Tokyo is bigger? And I do have the answer, so don't worry, I will tell you.
Well, I haven't been to the Tokyo one, but I have looked at it on, for example, Google Maps. I've kind of looked at it. And my guess, just off the top of my head, just a random guess, would be Kyoto is bigger. Is that right?
Nintendo Tokyo is 300 square meters, and Nintendo Kyoto is 740 square meters. So almost twice the size, which was a bit surprising to me. Even though it just opened, it seems like it didn't feel cramped with a lot of people, correct? Or was it really like shoulder to shoulder?
No, it felt, like I said, there was a lot of people there. It's the third day, so it was busy, but it was very, very manageable. I mean, my wife went off to a different section. She was like, I want to look at the Mario stuff. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to look at the Zelda stuff. And then I sort of lost her in the crowd for a bit, but I could still see her across the shop, and I could easily walk over to her without saying excuse me or suimasen to anybody. So no, it did not feel crowded at all. And I even took some pictures standing slightly near the entrance towards the back where I mentioned there's that LCD screen. If people are curious what I'm talking about, it's on my Instagram. There's a big LCD screen, but I took a picture of the whole shop from one end to the other, and I could basically almost take a shot directly through the whole shop with only about two or three people actually in my frame of the shot that I took. So no, it did not feel crowded at all. And there was so many staff in there as well that also sort of filled up the room. So there's a lot of tourists, but as well, there was, I think because it's opening week, there was a ton of staff, possibly overstaffed. But as I said, it was still very manageable, and it was comfortable and not stressful at all for me personally.
This week, the Nintendo merch stores also introduced new Mario and Pikmin merch. Did you see any of that while you were at the store?
I did see they had it clearly on display in the Pikmin section, I'm not sure what you would call them, sort of wind-up toys. Yeah, so I saw those. They had them very clearly displayed, and they seemed to be a popular choice with a lot of the mothers and smaller children seem to be picking those up and putting them in their bags. As to the Mario goods, I'm not sure. Maybe you can tell me more.
The ones that were added, there's like a big Goomba plushie, and there's also lanterns of like the Cheep Cheeps and Blooper. And I think it's just some other smaller things. But I think the big item is maybe the Goomba plushie.
I definitely saw a giant Goomba.
Okay, yes.
There was a ton of plushies. I saw a lot of Yoshi eggs and pretty much every Mario character. And I believe I did see a giant Goombas as well, yes.
Yeah, the Pikmin wind-up toys, that's definitely a hot item. I bought one online. I normally go to the store and buy it, but I was so afraid that they would be sold out. Did you pick up any merch, and were there any purchase limits set in place, like one item per person, for example?
Yes, a lot of the merchandise did have a sign on it in, I believe only Japanese, saying one per person or possibly even two per person or depending. And yeah, I did buy quite a bit. The funny thing is, my wife, she has very little interest in gaming. She's not a gamer at all. But when we got in there, something came over her. Maybe it was the whole atmosphere. And as I mentioned, just with all the lights and the screens, it's a really cool retail experience. But on top of that, there's also the audio. They had really crystal clear game music coming out the speakers, and the way everything's displayed makes it really appealing to you. So my wife went over to the Mario section, and then I met up with her, and she had about five things in her hand. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I think I want to get all these. I'm like, oh, really? I was quite surprised, taken back, because she's about my age. So she had like a Famicom and Famicom disc system when she was really little, like I did.
Right.
Or I mean, Nintendo Entertainment System. But since then, I mean, she hasn't played much gaming other than a bit of Wii and a few other games on Switch. So she was grabbing a few of the like magnets of the Mario games. It's like a blind bag, and it's one of the different games from the Mario series. She's like, I want to get one of these. I'm like, okay, sure. And she's like, oh, I also want to get one of these. It was like also a Mario mint. I think it was Ramune or mints inside it. And it was also one of the games from the Mario series, for example, Mario 3 or Super Mario World or a Galaxy, a little tin. So she thought that was quite cute. And she wanted to get one of those, even though she didn't actually know all of the games. I kind of beelined to the Kyoto specific merchandise because I thought about getting a shirt in Osaka, and then I didn't. And then when I went to the Kyoto one, that was the one thing I wanted to get, was a shirt. I was like, well, I mean, I live in Kyoto. I'm called the Kyoto Gamer. It only seems fitting that I buy a Nintendo Kyoto shirt. And I guess slightly disappointing for me was there was only one color. They only had red. And to be honest, if there was a choice between, like, I think Tokyo and Osaka, they have the gray as well as the red. I probably would have gone with the gray. So I immediately grabbed a shirt and threw it in the bag, as well as the stuff I mentioned that my wife got. And I also got the Kyoto Nintendo glass. There's a Kyoto-specific glass, and it's kind of, as I mentioned, the sort of tiled screen on the LCD thing. So it's like there's some squares with the different characters, and then on the glass there's blank squares. So it's sort of like a checkered board kind of design to it. And it says Kyoto Nintendo on it. So we got one of those. And the one thing that I've been trying to get for a while on the Nintendo online store, which I don't know about you, but I kind of get frustrated on there trying to find certain items because they either sell out too quickly or they never restock them. For my daughter, I wanted the glass, but the bottom of it's blue. And on the side are the fairies from Tears of the Kingdom or Breath of the Wild, the little floating fairies on it. So it's a very subtle design, but the blue on the bottom I thought is quite cool and cute. And she loved it when I brought it home.
What did you think of the unique statues at Nintendo Kyoto? There's a huge Mario coming out of a pipe and a flagpole Mario. Are there any others as well?
Actually, that's it, I think. As I mentioned earlier, the Osaka shop, and as you said, the Tokyo shop has different statues within in the shop of each IP for the different areas of the store, whereas this one didn't. And the only statues were on the rooftop, and there's signs saying, go up to the rooftop and see Flagpole Mario.
Oh, so it's not in the store?
No, I didn't mention this yet. There's actually a second floor to the shop, which is actually, it's enclosed, but it's on the roof. So there's signs towards an escalator that says, go up here and see the Flagpole Mario. And after we finally got through the massive line to pay for our items, that probably took about 15 minutes. And we got out, okay, let's go up to the roof now and see the Flagpole Mario. And I kind of assumed there would be a huge line to take pictures with it and all that. And we got up there and there was only about two people in front of us. So I was sort of surprised, taken back that no one else had come up to take pictures. And when you go up to the flagpole, there's a guy waiting, one of the staff members, and he says, you can take one picture with it each. So basically he's standing there and he'll take the picture for you, and you can go up and touch the flagpole and stand next to it, and he'll do one picture.
So where is the big pipe Mario located?
Well, it's actually not within the shop itself, which might be a surprise to many people. It's actually on the first floor of the department store, and it can actually be seen from outside of the department store itself. So after I went to the shop, I decided to go down to the first floor, and there was the massive Mario just as I left the department store. And again, there weren't that many people kind of taking pictures of it. The lady gestured me over to this specific, you know, photo spot. And there was about three other people there taking pictures. There were no lines to wait up to take a picture of it. You can't get too close to it or put anything on it or touch it, but you can stand back and take some pictures of it. So that's actually on the ground floor, just by the entrance of the department store. And somebody told me, I believe it's the biggest official Mario statue in the world. I'm not sure if you've heard that or not. But
I can't think of a bigger one, so I would assume that's correct. It is strange that both statues are not in the shop. That is very different from Nintendo Tokyo.
Yeah.
So can you see it from the street, the Mario statue?
Yes, you can, because the shop has, you know, glass doors and everything. So if you're walking by and you sort of look to your left or right, you sort of see through the glass the massive Mario just coming out of the pipe right in front of you.
Pretty cool. Going back to the merch, how was the amiibo selection? The store is brand new, so I kind of wonder if they're better stocked than, say, Nintendo Tokyo.
That was one of the things that I was also curious about, because I collect a lot of the amiibos, not all of them, but there was a lot that I wanted to see if they had or not. And to be honest, as I walked in and I looked around the store, I'd seen every section of the store and the game section and all the different merchandise. And I said, where the heck are the amiibos? I said to myself. And then as I sort of started looking really carefully, and where the game sections, the actual physical copies of the video games are, there was kind of a hidden behind that. There was sort of a small little shelf with amiibos on it. And it was really hard to see. It was not like right in front of you on a wall saying, buy me. It was sort of almost like it was like leftover stock. And they're like, let's just put this down here sort of out of the way. And they didn't have that many, to be honest. They had the Splatoon ones that came out last year, I believe it was, the 3-pack from Splatoon 3. And then on the other side of that sort of small area I mentioned, they had about 2 Zelda ones, which were very random. There was a Majora's Mask, and the other one was 8-bit Link, and that was it, which is kind of weird because it seemed very random that they had just those 2 amiibo out of all the Zelda ones. Why did they have that one? They didn't have the Tears of the Kingdom one, the Link, or anything else.
Yeah, Nintendo Tokyo is also very similar, where the amiibos are kind of on the bottom as well. So you have to bend down to actually get it. And I went to Nintendo Tokyo last week, and ironically, it had the 8-bit Link and also Majora's Mask Link. So that's kind of strange that those two are being stocked nationwide. I don't know why those two. This is kind of a side note, but is there a Pokemon Center anywhere close to Nintendo Kyoto?
I know in the Osaka store, they're like side by side. Yeah. And it's a bit, I found in the Osaka store, it was a bit chaotic up there. I went there during the summer holidays, and it was just madness up there. I think there might have been a Pokemon event up there, and it was just side by side. It did not work, in my opinion. It was too much in one spot. But the Kyoto one is actually about a 15-minute, 12-minute walk down the road. I say 15 minutes. It's on Shijo Street, but as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, there's Shijo Kawaramachi, where the Nintendo store is, and there's also Shijo Karasuma, which is the other kind of, I would say it's more of the business hub where a lot of the big banks are. And on that, near that corner, there's the Pokemon Center, which is, as I said, about 15 minutes down the road. So they're very far apart from each other.
Yeah, Nintendo Tokyo is also similar to Osaka, where they're across the hallway from each other. You can easily see the Pokemon Center from Nintendo Tokyo. And I kind of assume that all Nintendo stores will have a Pokemon Center next to it, because it is kind of strange that Nintendo Tokyo, Nintendo Kyoto doesn't really sell Pokemon merch, even though that's one of the most prominent Nintendo franchises. So they kind of even it out by having the Pokemon store, you know, in viewing distance. But I guess Nintendo Kyoto is a little different.
And I can't see it changing, because based on the layout in the department store, there's not really any space for any other shops to go in. The sort of area around the Nintendo store is sort of pop-up shops and things that seem to be temporary, like if they had some sort of fair, like a Hawaiian fair. I'd been to that floor before and they had a Hawaiian fair and things like that. But I can't see any actual new shops coming in, like a Capcom shop or whether it be, as you said, a Pokemon or anything else coming in there. I think it's just going to be Nintendo and that's it. Maybe on a different floor of the building, but not on that exact same floor.
Any feedback on your experience? Is there something you wish they did differently when it comes to the store?
Nothing in particular. I was pretty happy with it. I left with a grin on my face saying, like, yeah, that's pretty much everything I wanted it to be. I suppose something that personally I kind of hoped for was more Kyoto-specific merchandise. I thought, because I know in like the Nintendo store in New York, they do some of the shirts with kanji on them. And I thought, well, wouldn't that be neat if they did like an old school, like Kyoto, like to pay tribute to their roots, do something with the old logo on it or something like that. I thought that would have been pretty cool. But it was kind of everything Kyoto related was pretty much par for the Nintendo store course of just the logo and the name on it. So minor disappointment, I suppose I could say. But other than that, I think some of the items were not in stock yet because I asked one of the staff if they had, because they had a ton of the ice Pikmin, but they didn't have any of the other plushies available. So I asked the guy, do you have this blue one? Because my daughter likes the blue Pikmin and I thought I would pick one up. And he said, oh, sorry, that's just for display. We don't have them yet.
That's very strange.
So the way he implied we don't have them yet sort of made me assume that maybe the things are coming and there's going to be more variety and more options later. And one last thing that I was also disappointed with, there was no Metroid section in the Kyoto store. So it's one of my favorite games. And I was like, okay, I'd like to see the shirt. I didn't plan on buying the shirt, but I wanted to see the old school Famicom Metroid shirt, but they didn't have it or any other Metroid related merchandise. So I guess that was a disappointment for me personally.
If they open up a second Nintendo Kyoto, where would you like them to put it?
Second Nintendo Kyoto. I think realistically, if they built a second one, it would be at Kyoto Station. That's the only other place I can see them building one. Basically, in Kyoto, there's the central area I mentioned, the kind of CBD where the Shijo Street is. Then there's also Kyoto Station where there's massive department store and shopping complexes. And that's kind of the only other shopping retail area that I think would realistically be a spot where they built one. But I can't see that happening anytime soon. Just I think it'll be the one store. And I guess, when is it? In a few years in south of the prefecture, they'll be opening the museum, sort of museum thing.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for a second Nintendo Tokyo store because the one now is definitely a bit too small. And there's a lot of people. So I'm hoping they have multiple locations in one city. But ironically, if they do open up another Nintendo Tokyo, it will likely be farther away from my home compared to the Shibuya one. But maybe it will at least lessen the crowd a bit. And final question before I let you go. This has nothing to do with Nintendo Kyoto. But the last time you were on the podcast, we talked about Tears of the Kingdom. So right now, I want to hear your bottom line on that game.
Well, okay, I have beaten it. But I beat it on my daughter's game and my own personal game. I didn't want to beat it yet because once I beat it, I'm going to stop playing it. So I like it so much that I don't want to beat it.
Definitely.
If you know what I mean, I'm still enjoying making missions for myself. Like basically I'm trying to get all my gear up to the maximum level, which involves a lot of resource collecting and fighting of Lynels and everything else. So it's, as I said on your podcast, it's probably going to be the game of the year. And my mind hasn't changed since then. It's still my game of the year and I'm still playing it.
Awesome. It's very good to close that loop. So that was Nintendo Kyoto. I will hopefully make my way over there eventually. But if not, I can live vicariously through your photos. So Kyoto Gamer, where can people find you?
Well, I'm mainly on Instagram where I post, as I mentioned at the beginning, things related to retro gaming, gaming-related merchandise, as well as a bit of modern stuff. That's kyoto.gamer on Instagram. And I use the same name on my Threads account, which is kind of just a rehash of everything I do on Instagram, maybe slightly different, but it's just more of the same. So if you're on one of those two apps, please check me out and say hello.
Yes, listeners, highly recommend. I always think of it as like I'm kind of looking into some sort of parallel universe because, oh, this is the Kyoto side of Nintendo fandom. And I mostly post about the Tokyo side. So listeners, if you like my stuff, you will like Kyoto Gamer's account. So please follow. And the links to everything are in the podcast description. So check it out. Kyoto Gamer, once again, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was always fun to talk with you about game-related stuff.
Let's take a brief ad break and then get into Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
In today's age, you need a podcast you can trust. That's why you need Hair of the Dogcast, entertaining and well-informed discussions on both video games and beer. Meet our local podcast team. Dylan.
I'm out here on the street, Brad, and everyone's clamoring for better podcasts.
Our new rookie correspondent, Tyler.
I play The Witcher.
And I'm Brad, and I'm slowly learning to hate myself and video games. And Dylan's reporting to us live from Kingdom Hearts 3.
There's a lot of Frozen here. Too much Frozen.
Hair of the Dogcast is a podcast you can trust. On your favorite podcast app every Wednesday or whenever I decide to post it. Only on the Tokyo Beat Podcast Network.
Sorry, I haven't played Suika game yet, so I guess I'll dedicate this section to Super Mario Bros. Wonder, the latest 2D Mario platformer from Nintendo's EPD10 team. That group also put out Pikmin 4 just a few months ago, but I'm pretty sure there's no staff crossover. But to release both Pikmin and Wonder back-to-back is an incredible 1-2 punch. Let's poke around at the staff a bit. The director is Shiro Mori, who has worked on many Nintendo franchises like F-Zero, Mario, and Zelda as a programmer. His directorial debut was New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe, and I can imagine that being a test run for this game. A lot of other staff members are Mario veterans. Of course, the legendary Takashi Tezuka is the producer. You've got art director Masanobu Sato, Koichi Hayashida, who worked as the director of Galaxy 2 and the 3D series, and Koji Kondo also returns for the music. So it's not like they have tossed out the baby with the bathwater when creating a new direction for 2D Mario. Many key people are still on board. And it shows because Wonder feels like an expertly crafted 2D platformer by people who know the genre and know what makes Mario great. I've cleared two worlds, so these are still pretty early impressions, but Wonder is one of those games where every new idea is just so smartly integrated. I don't want to say it's perfect, but it feels like, okay, nothing is wrong yet. Everything is hitting. Maybe I should preface this by saying Mario is my favorite gaming franchise. Weirdly, I haven't really talked about the game so much on the podcast because I launched Tokyo Game Life in November 2021, and since then, there hasn't been that many big Mario titles released. I managed to sneak in the e-reader levels from Super Mario Bros. 3 on the podcast, but outside of that, I haven't really gotten to dig into a new Mario title. But not only do I love Mario, I am quite a big fan of the new series, including New Super Mario Bros. U, which I do consider to be a top-tier Mario game, so Wonder has a lot to live up to. But so far, everything they've dished out impressed me, and the game is filled with so many creative situations I've never seen in a Mario game. Should we get the new comparison out of the way? From other people's analysis, the physics of Wonder are almost exactly the same as New Super Mario Bros. U. The jump height, the jump distance, the character speed, all is pretty much one-to-one. Mario does seem to have a faster turn speed, and he stops his momentum after running much quicker. These are small additions, but they do result in Mario feeling a bit snappier in terms of readjusting and chaining jumps. I'd like to see a more detailed breakdown on the physics in specific situations, but controlling Mario felt very familiar, albeit with some immediately noticeable changes. I do think the physics system of U is pretty excellent overall. It's closer to World than not, so it definitely feels like a modern update of that physics system. But Wonder has made it even better without sacrificing the feel of the older titles. And compared to the new series, the art style is immediately distinctive. The color palette leans a bit more towards pastels compared to the saturated look of new, and the shading gives everything almost like a painterly look to it. A big reason why people turned on the new series is that they were tired of the bland, safe visuals. I do need to note that when the first new game came out on the DS, people did think it was a very clean and fresh take on 2D Mario. They showed off the Mega Mushroom, and the image of Mario destroying the level really hooked people. It does kind of feel like deja vu here with Wonder. It's yet another reboot of 2D Mario, which is what the franchise needed despite the high quality and the incredible sales of the new series. And I think the devs also felt like they wanted to be a bit more unshackled from past expectations. they wanted to put Mario in weirder and wackier scenarios, which led to the Wonder Mechanic. The gameplay is, yeah, it's 2D Mario. You go to the right, and you touch the flagpole, while also collecting a bunch of stuff. The game's big idea is the Wonder Flower, which you touch in order to completely change the level. These are shorter, specific gameplay segments that often introduce completely new mechanics you haven't seen anywhere else in the game. I won't spoil the biggest ones, but you've seen examples in the trailers like Mario suddenly walking on walls, or a lot of enemies appear, or Mario rides a stampede of bulls, and so forth. The game does front-load some of the wilder ones, so I would say maybe temper your expectations in terms of them being all crazy. You might think, wouldn't that ruin the flow of the level? So far, I don't feel like it does at all. Many point out that Mario stages follow a Kishoten Catch style of design. This is based on the concept in Japanese poetry, but in terms of Mario, each stage has four segments. You introduce a concept in a safe environment, then you have the player engage with the concept with more danger, then you introduce something that completely subverts or changes that concept in a new way, and you finally summarize everything you've done in the level for a final test at the end. Not every Mario stage follows this format, but it's a prominent design philosophy in many of the games. The Wonder Mechanic risks bringing the level to a halt just to test you in completely new ways that has nothing to do with the level, but I haven't felt that way yet. Some definitely seem to be a bit disconnected, but a lot are connected to what you've been doing in the level in subtle ways. In the castle stage, there's a couple of piranha plants, which are par for the course, so they're fairly easy to ignore. But the Wonder Mechanic makes the piranha plants a central figure in the stage now, and you have to engage with them in a completely unexpected way. The Wonder Mechanics are hard to predict, but once you do them, you understand why that level had that specific mechanic. And yes, I did mention this before on the podcast, but it is a slight ripoff of Kirby's Return to Dream Land, where sometimes Kirby is warped to a completely different stage after touching a power-up and does a unique challenge. But unlike in Kirby, Tezuka said that it was important that the Wonder Flower doesn't warp you anywhere, but instead changes the world around you. I think this is a good way in keeping the flow of the level. It doesn't stop, warp you, then spit you out when you're done, like in Kirby. But still, they ripped off Kirby, let's get real. Mario also stole the bubble and drill power-ups from Kirby, so what's going on here? I haven't encountered the drill power-up yet, but the bubble one is more fun than you think. It basically gives you another platform to pop off of, not unlike bouncing off of Cappy in Odyssey. It can also knock out enemies very easily and stop their momentum, so it's incredibly useful for enemies that just charge at you. But the biggest power-up, literally, is Elephant Mario. You turn into an elephant. That's it. That's the idea. You can attack with your trunk, you can break blocks, Super Mario can't, and you can spit out water. It doesn't exactly change the foundation of Mario or hurl society into a new era, but it's undoubtedly a fun power-up. I always want to be Elephant Mario. Why would you not want to be it? I haven't seen any spoilers, but I am really hoping that we get Elephant Bowser. I am wondering how they utilize Elephant Mario later on in the game, because it's not that radically different of a power-up compared to something like Cat Mario, which lets you traverse way more of the stage and has incredibly unique attacks like the dive. The structure of the game, again, is a mix of both familiar and new. You have a world map that you navigate, and you enter levels by visiting nodes spread across the map. Sometimes in a straight linear path, sometimes you can walk around and pick whichever stage you want. There's much more diversity here in the types of stages than in the past games. You've got your traditional platforming stages, and you also have battle arenas, badge challenges, races, and more. These also have difficulty stars next to them to help players decide on what they should tackle. But come on, it's a Mario game. You gotta do everything. You gotta get 100%. I do love how it gives players freedom in what they feel like tackling. If you're a bit tired of doing traditional stages, you have shorter, tighter challenge segments with the badge levels. The badge mechanic as a whole is also completely new, or it was taken from Paper Mario, who knows. You equip one to a character and it gives you a new ability. You get the parachute cap off the bat, which lets you glide a bit in the air, not unlike Peach in past games. There's also one that mimics the Yoshi flutter jump. It's fun to see all these past mechanics come back, and now they can be applied to any character. There are definitely some wackier badges, like one that perpetually makes you jump, and trailers showed off one that turns you invisible. Right now, I'm mostly rocking the wall kick-up, which lets you ascend vertically a bit more on wall jumps. It's very useful if you botch a jump and then slam into the side of a platform. I've seen the grappling hook one in the trailers, so I want to give that a try when I unlock it. But otherwise, I'm not quite sure what big power-up or badge I would want to slap onto Mario. He noticeably does not have the triple jump from the past games, but I have heard that it is a badge, so you can rectify that if you so choose. I would like to hear from the devs about why they made the triple jump optional. It's a very beloved mechanic, but I think maybe a lot of the wonder stages simply aren't built around it. Going back to the stages, the badge levels basically put you on an obstacle course where you only use a specific badge. These are pretty worry-free since you won't lose a life, and they really do help you understand the strengths and limits of each badge. And there are a couple of other stages that also prevent you from losing a life. There's one called Jump, 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 where you need to jump across platforms that appear and disappear. If you fall into the abyss, you're actually warped to another part of the level that has a flagpole, so you can still technically clear the level without losing a life if you botch that jump. But the game still has a lives system, which I do feel is a bit outdated. I mean, it's always fun to get 99 lives, but they got rid of lives in Odyssey and replaced them with coins. Maybe they don't want to take away your purple coins, since those are a bit difficult to get, but I do think we can move past lives in 2D Mario. Other things I haven't touched on, the game has a ton of completely new enemies. Mario has the best enemies in all of gaming, so it's always exciting to see a new one. I haven't chiseled their names into my mind yet, but I love the little angry guys that kick ice blocks, and the snails are really fun too. I also quite like the pushing Sumo Brothers looking guys. Thankfully, they just push you away instead of instantly killing you. I haven't encountered any really crazy boss yet. The castle seems to just have Bowser Jr., who I do love, of course. But it's odd that 2D Mario games really don't have memorable boss battles outside of mini versions of Bowser. Again, bringing up Kirby, that franchise is all about wild boss encounters, which does separate it from Mario now that I think about it. I haven't seen Boom Boom yet, so I do wonder if he's been demoted or just exiled to the new series. For collectibles, you've got the Wonder Seeds, which are kind of, I don't want to say story-based rewards, but they are unlike other Mario collectibles in that you don't just find them. You have to activate the Wonder Flower to receive them, or go through the correct exit. And yes, you can miss them, believe it or not. The Wonder Flower is a bit more hidden than you'd think in some stages, so that encourages replays. There's also the 10-value purple coins that do function similarly to the other big coins in past Mario games. There's 3 to a level. What's new this time around is that if you die after collecting it, as long as you don't exit the stage, it will still count as being collected. This is different from the new franchise, which required you to hit a checkpoint or beat the level after getting a coin, or else it would reset if you died. I did like the tension in having to get the coin and then making it to safety, but I don't mind this change at all. Throughout the levels, you can also collect purple coins, which is the currency for the store. When you activate Wonder Mode, all the purple coins count as 0.1 of a coin, which is a bit odd. I guess they want to flood the screen with coins, but also they need to manage the economy of the game. And speaking of that, there is a store in the game that lets you buy new badges, 1-ups, Wonder Seeds, and standees for the online mode with the purple coins. And speaking of online, Nintendo has completely revamped how online Mario works, and it's for the better. 4-player online Mario is something everybody has wanted forever, but Nintendo has mostly been hesitant in including it in a big way. Online multiplayer wasn't in any of the U versions, and it was friends only for 3D World Switch. Mario Maker 2 did have random online multiplayer, but it was one of the laggiest experiences I've ever seen in a game. When it worked, it was incredibly fun, but that was maybe about 50% of the time. Here, Nintendo has used every loophole possible to deliver an online experience that mimics people playing right next to you without sacrificing the experience through lag or disconnects. It's a very passive online experience where other live players pop into the world map and even into your stages. You can see transparent versions of them in your game, and while you won't bump into each other, you can save them by putting down a special marker for them to touch and then heal. It admittedly can be a bit frantic, so I can see some people turning it off immediately, but I do think it's worth trying out. It is fun to see other people finding hidden routes or keeping up with your character, and Nintendo went out of their way to make it feel a bit more authentic, like only having different characters appear in your game. So if you're Mario, you won't see another Mario. You can also make a friend lobby and even race your friends in the stages. Ironically, though it never really had random matchmaking for multiplayer, Mario games have always had interesting online elements. 3D World had the Miiverse messages, Mario Maker had the notes and the death marks, and now we have this weird passive mode that, yes, isn't too far away from a strand game, since you are helping people asynchronously. I've seen some people call it a stand game because you revive people with a standee, and yeah, that should be the new name of the genre. Nintendo has, yet again, given us another amazing platformer. I do like to say that I'm a fan of the platformer genre as a whole, but whenever I play a non-Mario platformer, I just think, man, Mario really does have an X factor that many other platformers just don't have. Mario just always feels excellent to control, and they smartly design levels around his abilities, and the game is just completely overflowing with personality, especially thanks to the new very expressive animations from everyone, even the lowliest of Goombas. You don't really think about it when you're playing it, but Wonder is maybe the most expensive 2D platformer ever, right? No, it doesn't look like Spider-Man, but the production values are just so much higher than the competition. I've really only scratched the surface of the game, so I'll definitely share more of my thoughts once I beat it. As long as I don't get completely obsessed with Suica game. And that's it for the games, now for the news! Let's run through the news. Analog has announced the Analog 3D, their version of the N64 hardware. If you're not familiar with them, Analog is a hardware maker who creates modern versions of classic consoles. I have an Analog Pocket, which I did talk about before on the podcast, and I instantly became an Analog fan after that. The 3D is designed to play N64 carts in 4K on modern TVs. It is also compatible with the original N64 controllers, but 8-Bit Do is putting out a special controller for the hardware that looks like, well, a modern controller, but with the N64 buttons. No price yet, but it's coming out in 2024, and I'm sure it will be snatched up immediately. There's a lot of love and nostalgia for the N64, so I can see a lot of people jumping on it. Plus, I think those scummy scalpers are quite familiar with Analog by now, so I expect a lot to pop up on the secondhand market a few days after it goes live. This is Analog's first foray into 3D hardware. Before that, they just focused on 8 and 16-bit consoles. I think many expected them to jump on the PS1 first, but N64 is still cart-based, so that might be an easier transition. Will I pick it up? At least for me, it feels like an easy skip. I already have an N64 and a Framemeister, so I can still play a lot of games on the real hardware, plus plenty of Nintendo 64 games are already available on NSO. Is that the best emulation out there? No, and playing it off the cart is always better, but the NSO versions are convenient and just good enough. The Pocket had a tremendous novelty in that it duplicated the exact form factor of the Game Boy while improving its greatest flaws. Plus, the GB and GBA library, especially on the Japan side, is much deeper than the N64. I mean, I love the N64. It's one of my personal favorite consoles, but I've already played its masterpieces. I'm sure there are hidden gems I've never touched, but compared to a lot of other consoles, there's not a lot there to explore. It only had a few hundred games spread across all the regions. An analog version of a PS1 would be way more interesting since Japan has a ton of exclusive games and oddities. There's a Bomberman RPG for the PS1. Don't you want to play that in 4K? But the 3D will undoubtedly be good hardware for those who do want a modern N64. Splatoon 3 will have its first Splatoween event on October 27th. They didn't have one last year because of a collab Splatfest with Pokemon, but they really went all out with this year's event. We're getting new Halloween gear, plus Deep Cut and the Squid Sisters have awesome Halloween costumes. Shiver is a goth vampire, Big Man is a ghost, Fry is, I guess, a belly dancer, which isn't really that scary. The Splatfest theme is who would you befriend, zombies, skeletons, or ghosts? I gotta go with ghosts on this one. Can you even talk to a zombie or a skeleton? Honestly, these holiday events aren't that big in terms of new content, but the few new pieces of gear and the theming is excellent, so I'll definitely pop in. I'm hoping we also get a winter event this year, since last year didn't have one either. Last bit of news, toy maker Sané has announced that an Elephant Mario plushie will come out in mid-January. This is the first piece of Elephant Mario merch, which is pretty surprising. I thought Nintendo would go all in, but their Wonder theme merch has been pretty muted. I might talk about it as the feature in the next episode, but I was definitely expecting a lot more Wonder imagery in the marketing for the game. The 7-Eleven collabs are mostly just generic Mario theming, for example. Like they did with Pikmin, Nintendo has kind of slow rolled out a lot of the cool merch after the game has been released. We are definitely getting elephant plushies of the other characters next year, so get ready to empty that wallet. Okay, I think we can wrap it up. Thanks as always for listening. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on your favorite app. Leave a 5-star review as well. It really helps with visibility. This podcast is also available on YouTube, so like and subscribe there as well. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky. Just search for Tokyo Game Life or find the links in the podcast description. If you like the podcast, be sure to share it with your friends and on social media. If there's anything you want me to talk about or cover, don't be shy. Just message me on Twitter. The next episode will be on November 5th. See you next time. Matane.